In November, the five women attended the Hotel Marseille for further examination. This time, only Craver from the committee was present, but it was not he who was in command. Instead, Dr. Schlunt, the intimate friend of Vice President Barker, who had already declared the women to be non-radioactive in the company's breath tests in April, took charge. Barker himself was also present and assisted. There was a further doctor, Dr. Fehler, in attendance too. The girls perceived at once that this was not an impartial exam, but what recourse did they have to stop it? It was part of their settlement that they would agree to medical procedures. And so they were forced to strip as directed and went through the tests with the company men watching all they did closely. The moment they were free from the hotel, however, Grace Fryer telephoned Berry. She was, as in many ways she always had been, the linchpin of the group and their leader. Now she brought their collective protest to Berry. Their lawyer was outraged. He wrote at once to USRC to say he viewed the hotel setting with great suspicion and believed the presence of Barker and Schlunt constitutes a breach of the settlement agreement, for the committee tests were supposed to be non-partisan. As it turned out, however, Dr. Fehler declared emphatically, "All five patients are radioactive." It was a genuine blow to the company, for every day they seemed to receive another lawsuit. They'd wanted to have these famous dial painters deemed free of radium as a further defence. Berry himself was representing one of the new cases, acting for May Cubberley Canfield, the dial painter who'd instructed Catherine Sharp. Like the others, May's teeth were gone and her gums infected. Her jaw also felt funny, like a knock in it, and she was paralysed intermittently on her right side. Berry won a battle partway through the new war when the judge in May's case ruled that Dr. Flynn could not conduct examinations of her for the company. Only a physician could do it. It was a small victory, for nothing had come of Berry's complaints to the authorities about Flynn. The lack of action left him free to publish. Flynn next blamed the girls' improper diet for their tendency to store radium in their bones. No one knew what von Sohotsky's diet was, but, improper or not, that November he lost his battle against the radium inside him. Martland paid tribute to the doctor. "Without his valuable aid and suggestions," he said, "we would have been greatly handicapped in our investigation." That was true, for without von Sohotsky's help with the creation of the tests, radium poisoning might never have been medically proven. Of course, without von Sohotsky's invention of luminous paint in the first place, the girls would have been leading very different lives. For the girls, they could not forget what they saw as the doctor's betrayal in the courtroom. Perhaps, then, there was a kind of schadenfreude in his demise. One newspaper described radium paint as a veritable Frankenstein in a test tube which has turned on its creator. Martland added, "He died a horrible death." It meant he wasn't present at the National Radium Conference held in December 1928. All the key players were there: Hamilton, Wiley, Martland, Humphreys, Roach, Ethelbert Stewart, Flynn, Schlunt, and the Radium Company executives. No one invited the dial painters.